Redefining Freedom of Religion.
The right to religion and freedom of religion is not just about belief. It's about belief and practice. It's about living out what it is that you hold deeply to be true, whether it's in the context of church or whether it's in the context of community, whether it's in the context of your family. This is critical. We start undermining what it actually means to have freedom of religion and just call it freedom of religious belief. We're traveling down a road that I'm not sure we want to do in Canada.
On the feature today, CARDIS President Michael Van Pelt on that proposed new diversity policy at Universities Canada. In the news, some movement in the Alberta education controversy and a new development along those same lines in BC. On a related note, last week, ARPA's Executive Director Mark Penninga had an op-ed published in the Edmonton Journal on the education situation, and more vandalism to a pro-life billboard in BC.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
There were some new developments last week in the controversy surrounding those two Baptist schools near Edmonton who are refusing to submit a plan to the Provincial Education Ministry on how they'll comply with the province's guidelines on gender equity and gay-straight alliances in schools. We'll have more on that in a minute, but you should also know that ARPA Executive Director Mark Penninga had an op-ed published in the Edmonton Journal on this issue last week. Penninga says he was prompted to write the piece in response to a broadly held misconception in Alberta, the notion that somehow the government and schools are mandated specifically to safeguard the so-called charter rights of students in the province.
Do students have a charter right to form a gay-straight alliance in a Christian school? The charter itself, if you read it, you'll see that it specifies it applies to Parliament and the legislatures. It's supposed to be a shield that protects Canadians from inappropriate government intrusion. So in other words, a good case could be made that it's actually the province of Alberta that's violating the charter because it's trying to force these Christian schools to undermine their faith.
Penninga says that misconception about the charter is so widely held that it even includes members of the legislature.
When Andre and I met with MLAs in the Alberta legislature this spring, we discovered that this key misunderstanding was also present with other MLAs. They mistakenly believed that they had to protect the so-called charter rights of the students. So it's crucial that people like Pastor Coldwell is speaking up, standing up for these basic rights.
We link to his op-ed from the Lighthouse News homepage this week. Back to the main story, Education Minister David Egan moved last week to try to bring some resolution to the controversy involving Pastor Brian Coldwell's Independent Baptist Christian Education Society. The minister last week announced a third-party inquiry into that society. He says Coldwell's written response to demands for a policy on transgenderism and gay-straight alliances was not satisfactory because that response didn't include a specific commitment that would have the society's schools provide those GSA clubs if students asked for them. ARPA's education policy consultant Harry Mose says, in a sense, the appointment of the inquiry could be seen as a positive move.
I always think it's a win for any type of situation of conflict when people are actually going to meet face-to-face. You know, it's one thing to discuss an issue via the news media, but it's quite a different thing when you meet face-to-face and you can actually really explain your situation and what undergirds your faith-based position.
Egan has said he'll consider cutting funding to the Baptist School Society if there's no resolution to the impasse. The society got about $1.5 million from the government last year. There's a related development on this story. The BC legislature met in special session earlier this summer to amend the BC Human Rights Code. The change specifically moved to include transgenderism as a prohibited ground for discrimination in the BC Code. And the education minister in BC sent out a memo to all schools in the province a few weeks after that, asking them to consider policies to align themselves with the new reality in the code. However, Harry Mose says the BC approach is a lot different than what's happening in Alberta.
The Ministry of Education in British Columbia desires to dialogue with independent schools. We have never experienced in my 42 years as an administrator where the ministry comes down heavy-handed and says, thus you shall do. There has been dialogue on this issue, and there continues to be dialogue. And I can assure you that ARPA as well, the representatives of the ARPA office, both nationally as well as here provincially, are working with this particular memorandum and will be working on the ground on this particular issue.
Several hundred people turned up at the Ontario legislature last week for a protest against that province's controversial sex education program. The main theme of all the speakers at the rally was that the curriculum is age inappropriate, that it teaches too much too soon, and that the province is undermining parental rights by imposing the curriculum. One of the speakers was ARPA's Director of Grassroots Engagement, Colin Postma.
Parents have every right to be upset, for the same reason that we would be upset if the government was telling our children to experiment with alcohol or tobacco. These are legal substances that adults can use as they like according to government regulations. And yet, we would be furious with an educational policy that advocated experimenting with these substances on our children. For some reason, the government seems to see sex in some vacuum, where the normal precautions just don't apply.
Organizers of the protest conceded they don't really expect the government to cancel the curriculum. Rather, they say the protest was a way to keep the issue front and center in advance of an upcoming provincial election in Ontario. And remember that pro-life billboard in Kelowna, B.C. that was vandalized earlier this summer? Well, it's happened again. People who didn't like the message on that billboard, a message that juxtaposed a picture of a puppy with that of an unborn child, spray-painted obscenities, swastikas, and other graffiti on it. It's the fourth time this has happened. Marlon Bartram from Pro-Life Kelowna says it's been frustrating, but the billboard company has fixed the damage every time.
They've been very good to us. Every time they've been very patient with us. They've cleaned up the sign. They do everything they can to keep the sign up.
So I asked Bartram whether, given the experience his group has had, he'd recommend a similar billboard campaign to other pro-lifers across the country.
As long as your budget can handle it, and then we take precautions to try and deter or avoid this type of vandalism, but I think that if we just let them, you know, use their illegal tactics to pressure us into silence, I think that's wrong too. I mean, there's lives at stake here. Babies are being killed, and we have to do everything we can to speak out against that.
Kelowna Group has now added a security camera to the billboard installation in hopes of catching the vandals next time out. Back with more after this.
This fall, how about taking your Bible study class on the road? Our fall tour theme, titled When the Foundations Crumble, What Can the Righteous Do, comes from Psalm 11. The speech topics deal with transgenderism, pornography, and the culture of death that permeates our society. How do Christians respond to these issues with grace, truth, and love? Come find out. We'll have worksheets available and look forward to being part of your Bible study. Visit arpacanada.ca for details.
And we're back on the program. As we told you last week, faith-based universities in Canada could be under the threat of losing their accreditation and standing in the country's academic community. A group called Universities Canada is looking at a policy change to mandate a non-discrimination policy for all of its 97 member universities across the country. That policy would, among other things, bar membership in the group from universities who hold to certain views on things such as homosexuality. The policy explicitly discounts charter rights to freedom of religion. It was first unveiled in an article written by the president of CARDIS, Michael Van Pelt, in their Convivium magazine. I've got Mr. Van Pelt on the program. First of all, Michael, welcome to Lighthouse News.
Al, it's good to be with you.
Let's talk a little bit about the story we had last week about Universities Canada and their accreditation process. A bit of history, I think, is in order here. A lot of people don't even know this organization exists. Who are they and how much practical power do they really wield within sort of academia in Canada?
Universities Canada is essentially a business association. It represents the 97 universities in Canada. The members are the presidents of the university, which indicates that it's a very high-level organization. It is the gold star of university associations. You need to be a part of it to be in. If your university isn't a part of Universities Canada, you have all kinds of disadvantages that you have to live with.
Such as what?
Well, Universities Canada, first of all, if you look at their own internal budget, they have a budget of approximately $20 million. I think approximately $7 million of that comes from government. They distribute substantial amounts of money on behalf of government. Their certification process is a key certification for universities to gain credibility beyond their own communities. Their key criteria with respect to universities accessing insurance, many different advantages and privileges that universities have access through Universities Canada would be at stake if you're not a member.
Okay, so let's move to the policy proposal that CARDIS discovered, uncovered, unveiled, whatever, in the article that you wrote. What exactly is the board looking at and what does it actually mean?
So the board of directors is actually presenting on October 26th two things, a bylaw and then supporting the bylaw, a policy that is a lot more descriptive. The bylaw is generally a non-discrimination bylaw that kind of sets the, kind of, as it were, the motherhood and apple pie of certain rights and privileges that members would have to adhere to. And there's a number of challenges in the bylaw, as there is in the policy itself. This is rooted on a discussion and I think significant pressure on Universities Canada to create a criteria for which certain universities can or cannot come into their fold, as it were. Quite frankly, it is largely targeted to the faith-based universities. First thing it does is in the bylaw, it actually does not use the historic kind of understanding of freedom of religion with respect to articulating the freedoms and the rights of the members. It actually talks just about religious belief, which is really interesting for those who are active, faithful players. Religious belief is one thing, and the right to religious belief is another thing. But the right to religion and freedom of religion is not just about belief. It's about belief and practice. It's about living out what it is that you hold deeply to be true, whether it's in the context of church or whether it's in the context of community, whether it's in the context of your family. This is critical. We start undermining what it actually means to have freedom of religion and just call it freedom of religious belief. We're traveling down a road that I'm not sure we want to do in Canada.
You know, we've got the Legal Leaders for Diversity. We've got the Trinity Western Challenge, which most observers say in one form or other will end up before the Supreme Court. I almost want to ask a political question here. Could this action be seen as kind of a provisional blow in case the LLD thing fails and the Trinity Western thing ends up going in favor of the university? Is this another way to achieve the same thing that is being fought in the Trinity Western case right now?
Two things, Al. Number one, this is in some cases, is a much more challenging and all-encompassing direction. The ability for a university to operate with credibility and with robustness without certification into Universities Canada makes it very, very difficult. It goes all the way to affecting how they deliver their athletic programs. So this is actually a big deal for those universities, and in some senses even more challenging than an issue like we would have at Trinity Western with respect to the law school. The second piece on this is the implications of a voluntary association creating membership criteria that excludes other religious organizations based on the rights that they have today in society, based on religion, is problematic into the future. It's not going to just apply to universities, but who else will it apply to in the future? That's a real concern for me. That's why this is not just a concern for people who are in the university setting. It's a concern for any Canadian who's involved in a civil society organization that may have a religious tradition to it. Remember, we have 88,000 charitable organizations in Canada, the majority of which are faith-based. So the concern extends far beyond the universities. Here's the other way to look at this. Let's just flip the question around. Let's ask Universities Canada why they would do such a thing as they're planning now when they know perfectly well that the Trinity Western case is going to the courts. Why would Universities Canada do behind closed doors in this way what, quite frankly, the law societies are having to have to do in the courts? I don't get that, and we need to be publicly asking a lot of questions from many different angles to be able to challenge Universities Canada respectfully on what their thinking is here.
Which kind of moves to my final question because we're running out of time. Universities Canada is not a political entity in the sense of, you know, the accountability that you would have with a member of parliament, for example. Given that, what can people do to affect the outcome of the decision that's coming at that October board meeting?
They need one-third of the university presidents of the 97 university presidents to say, you know what, go back to the drawing board on this bylaw. It's not the right thing to do right now, and get it tabled. That's the easiest approach, or create an amendment. It's all up to the university presidents. And every which way we can think of encouraging university presidents across this country to revisit this idea and to respect the basic religious freedoms, which we already have today, will be the way to help us ensure that this doesn't get passed.
Michael, we'll be following this one closely. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And just a programming note to close, there will be no Lighthouse News podcast next week. The next scheduled posting on our website will be the day after Thanksgiving, October 11th.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpaccanada.ca. Be sure to join us again in 2 weeks for another edition of Lighthouse News.